Welcome to On Mindfulness. On Mindfulness is an offering of the Shasta Resilience Project, a group of trained and certified facilitators committed to bringing mindfulness approaches to our communities as ways of increasing well-being and decreasing stress. My name is Sharon Brizoler, and I'm your host and coordinator for the Shasta Resilience Project. Each month, we will bring you interviews with wellness practitioners and residents who have found mindfulness and mind-body medicine, as well as other mindfulness tools, useful in their lives and work. Today's guest is Malama McNeil, who's a mind-body medicine practitioner engaged in a number of healing practices. And we'll dive into some of those today and hear about her offerings and how she got involved. So I'm going to turn it over to you, as we typically do in these conversations, and let you introduce yourself with whatever you feel is important to ground our conversation today.
Well, the invitation, to join you today came out of your learning that I have an interest in and am active in supporting people in their grieving. And that's always big for me. So we could start there. Perhaps the listeners would like to know, you know, how I got involved and how I'm practicing at this time, what I call grief tending. And it really starts with the middle of my three daughters was severely disabled, neurodegenerative condition, which we were told would end her life very early. And I made it my business to figure out how to be the very best mother of someone who was dying. I had the opportunity to work with and study with and practice with a man named Ken Moses, who first announced that all of the terrible suffering that my partner and I were experiencing, that our whole family was experiencing around this disabling condition that had appeared in our daughter, was grieving. And that sounded true to me somehow, and hopeful. So I set out to learn how to grieve well, which was really just my engagement with the denial of my inability to alter our daughter's fate. She lived actually almost 20 years past the date of her expected death, and was you know, my biggest teacher in how to be with dying, which is how to be with living, to appreciate the moment and be in the moment. That contributed to my interest in learning mind-body medicine techniques, which really are about being present. As I've worked with as a hospice volunteer and as a manual therapist, I became a hands-on healer so that I could work from home and be available to care for my daughter as her physical condition declined.
So when you mentioned the process of grieving or being with dying with a parallel to being with living, and the grieving that happens before a more definitive loss, that really resonated with me on a number of levels, having my mom experiencing Alzheimer's before she passed, and all of the loss that was and grieving that I did beforehand, although I might not have recognized it as such until later. And also having lost a loved one to suicide after a lot of ideation. For me, your framing is so helpful in thinking about those experiences. So I wonder if you can tell us a little more about how that was helpful for you or others.
I'll give you the definition of grieving because that I work with that was first given to me by Ken Moses. In that it's a much broader, bigger arena than we often associate with it. We don't experience grief just because someone is dying or as you mentioned, is disappearing into dementia. That was technically the condition that our daughter experienced, was a dementia, profound dementia. And what Ken said is that grieving is the fundamental way people grow. So that makes it, grow, change, or heal. We often speak of the insult of a loss, of a grievous loss, as like a wound that needs healing. But grieving is ongoing. And it is the natural, normal, unlearned, spontaneous, feeling response. Now, each of those words is loaded. Each of those definers, for me, just includes more of my experience and gives me permission to experience my grief however it comes.
Can you say those again? That natural.
It's natural. It's not a pathology to grieve. It's normal. It's just part of life. It's unlearned. We don't have to learn how to grieve. We do tend to have to learn how to unlearn all the ways we've been taught, trained, not to grieve.
Especially here in the US.
Another of my teachers, Stephen Jenkinson, speaks of us as grief illiterate, as if we don't know how to read the signs that this is something that really matters to us, and it challenges our sense, our core sense of who we are, what our place in the world is, and even how the world works. And the outcome of grieving, which cannot be done alone. We don't grieve alone. We must have a significant other. I mean, for many of us, that may be our relationship with the higher power, our deity, with our helping spirit. And for most of us, it means relationships that are unconditional and supporting, compassionate with other human beings. I mean, we grieve, we're social beings. We experience loss in a social context, and so we experience the grief that we grow out of, or because of that loss. And I'm kind of avoiding using the term healing from the loss, because that isn't how I experience it. And I think it's misleading to many of us. It's part of our grief illiteracy to think that we get over it. You know, it heals up. Maybe there's a scar there and we never forget the person that died, or the job that we loved that we've lost, or the country that we've been exiled from. Or, I mean, losses are of many kinds. We just learn and grow and become a little more who we actually were meant to be. And that's part of that unlearning, I think, of the socialization we get about, you know, I'm the kind of person who doesn't really show her emotions, doesn't really, you know, get emotional, certainly not with people. I don't cry. There's all kinds of scripts that we read around loss and just around being. When we're able to just be present in the moment without expectation, I was going to say without regret, but often regret is a really good way to get very present. When we're feeling remorse or feeling that sense of bereavement that regret entails, you know, I will never see this person again. I will never engage in that activity again. And so on. That brings us right to the moment. And it's being present to what life has brought us and what we are bringing to life that I'm talking about when I say, you know, it's about being with living. Another of my teachers, Frank Ostasevsky, who helped to found the Zen Hospice in San Francisco and went on to found something called the Metta Foundation that for many years was providing compassionate end-of-life care training to professionals and non-professionals who were called to serve in hospice or other situations where, you know, maybe just with a family member, as was the case for me. And Frank was a Zen Buddhist, devoted practice, who was asked at one point, what are the principles of the compassionate end of life care? And he said, well, he's a Buddhist, so he made up some precepts. He voiced it, the five precepts. Don't wait. Don't wait for the perfect moment. Don't wait until you know what to say. Don't wait to say, I love you. Don't wait to say, this really hurts. You know? Mm-hmm. This really sucks. And bring all of yourself to the moment, to the activity. Accept everything, push away nothing. Big one. Yeah, this is not how I wanted it to be. So I'm just not going to accept it. It is what it is. Be open to it. Life showing up just as it seems to be showing up. Find a place of rest in the midst of things, which was the biggest one for me. In caring for my daughter, I was so sure that there was something we could do that would make it all different. Certainly, I've observed that in supporting folks who are living with, as you pointed out, with your mother with Alzheimer's, with individuals who are disappearing into the end of their life, whether it's in dementia or, you know, a terminal illness, as they lose parts of themselves, their physical vigor, or their sense of humor, their ease. Find the place of rest in the midst of things. That's what grief tending is living those precepts, bringing those precepts to the situation that is challenging me to simply be spontaneous in response to the changes that are challenging me in the moment. And maybe all it means is that I go, I'm overwhelmed. This is really challenging. I think I will just find a place of rest for a moment and bring all of my awareness. Maybe I'll, you know, really just check in with my physical body. Follow my breath. Yeah, the concept that grieving is a process that's not tied with a particular trigger, to use a much overused word.
Yeah.
That grieving is ongoing. All day long, we're letting go of something and letting in something else. I mean, breathe in, breathe out. And that we can get so fixated in our minds on being the way we think we're expected to be, our socialization, you know, our upbringing, is less than adequate, mainly because we're being socialized by, you know, a couple of people, maybe only one, in our nuclear family, early in our early lives. We're lucky if we have that. Most of us don't have extended families that are much involved. Most of us don't have a village. And I mean, it's a truism about it takes a village to raise a child. But a child raised in a village has many more options for actually being recognized and recognizing themselves, who they are, what they're here for. You know, who called them here? To use a kind of indigenous perspective, we didn't just, you know, come out of nowhere, and we're not just going nowhere. That's my worldview, my cosmology, says that I'm just the latest iteration of a lineage. And maybe it was my ancestors, you know, who sent me here, and maybe it was my descendants who called me here to be here now. And maybe there was a particular mission that I was handed as I came in, and maybe that is really not my mission, and I need to discover my mission by being really present to what life brings me.
I think about how powerfully we're socialized by forces we did not intentionally choose. So media or a particular religious or spiritual background that we're born into, or the education system or the culture. And it makes me think of what you said earlier about our process of unlearning. You know, acknowledging grieving is a process. It doesn't necessarily go away or get healed. But as we progress, we can experience less strong sadness and more love in the memory, or more cherishing. Is that something that resonates with you, or do you see that?
Yeah, very. For 7 years, I did these small group grief facilitation intensives. We'd spend a week together looking at how grief was moving in our lives, you know, what was grief worthy, what was and how those feelings that were part of our grieving weren't actually being expressed in any kind of fluency. Learning to help facilitate other people's one another's grieving by being really present, by reflecting back, you know, what I hear you saying is that actually the case? You know, that you're saying, there's no way you're going to accept this ever. and helping, you know, each of us really come into our present state of maybe intense emotional feeling, and use the power of that those feelings to make shifts in our beliefs, in our sense of self, in our understanding of our place in the world, and all of that. This is what my religion taught me, you know, all through Sunday school, and that's not true, you know. it's not true for me now today. So I wonder what is, now that there's a big opening for life to bring. The fifth precept, which I didn't mention, was cultivate don't know mind. You know, let yourself be empty. Let yourself be at a loss. Literally, at a loss.
Yeah.
Let yourself not know what to do. And have that be natural, normal, unlearned.
Yeah, that beginner's mind.
And when we can bring that to one another, also, I mean, that's definitely part of the grief tending, is tell me, how is it with you? No, you seem this way, but I'm not going to presume that I know what your experience is. You know, share with me as you can. And very often, something other than talking might be the the best way. You know, let's just go for a walk. You know, let's run, let's dance, let's scream, let's whatever it takes. And recently, I've discovered the power of singing in a group. There's a pretty strong, powerful movement of people singing relatively simple songs in circles, song circles. And that circle is an important, that's the village. You know, everybody needs to be there that is there. Every voice is welcome, not just the professional singers or the ones who know how to find the harmonies, but every voice is welcome to join in this simple song. Here, I'll teach you. These are the words. This is the melody. And the song circle leaders, the ones I've experienced, are just really gifted in being able to do this sort of call response. It feels like a very fundamental, you know, natural way to be a human being who is verbal. And you don't even have to be verbal, you know, to hum along, to feel the song in your body and move with it. And there's tremendous power in being in a group, I recently read Dr. Keltner's book, Awe, and he says that one of the life wonders, he identified 8 life wonders that inspire awe in us. One of them is experience with music. Now, where most of us have had an experience of listening to a symphony or something. Indian ragas used to do it for me. It's like, oh my goodness, there's so much more going on than just this immediate setting. The experience of something larger than myself, more eternal, more beautiful than I could have imagined. So experience with music and experience shared in a group. And that could be, marching in the army. That could be being part of the crowd at a sporting event, and being one of those, cheeseheads or whatever. When you're singing in a song circle, you're doing both. You're having a musical experience, which can touch you deeply in ways that nothing else does, really. And you're doing it with others, and the sense of being part of something and creating something that is moving us all into a wider awareness really helps break down those, oh, I know what's going on here. And the experience in the song circle is not so much, get out of your head, get into your body, let the music move through your body from the belly, breathe deep, let it out through the mouth. Again, it's soft belly breathing with a tune. Oh boy.
Yeah, or like the shaking and dancing.
Yeah, and then there's the experience of hearing others who are contributing their unique harmony, their unique take on the timing, the syncopation, and so on. And the person with whom that song leader that I experienced this with most profoundly recently is also a grief tender. She conducts grief rituals according to a model that many of us have been exposed to, having to do with Francis Weller's work, which actually Francis learned it from Maladoma and Sabanfu Somme, West Africans, who've brought a way to be in grief in community, be witnessed and held without being redirected, told how to do it, told when to stop. It reignites our natural, normal, unlearned, spontaneous, I think this is in our bones, that this is human. It's not even human, it's mammalian, because we see that other people who wear fur and, have 4 legs, grieve. And often they're better grief tenders than a lot of us, because they haven't unlearned, they have they haven't been convinced that they're supposed to be stoic.
Well, and there's also that vocalization, the purring, or the, you remind me of, I don't know if you've read My Grandmother's Hands by Rezma Menakem.
Yeah.
And so for listeners, he works a lot on racialized trauma and has worked with people in the military. And he's got a list of practices. I believe it's in that book. I've read more than one of his books, but humming is one, and having your hand on your chest, perhaps, so you can feel the resonance of that. reminding us that many of us either hum to ourselves or had a caretaker hum or sing to us. And he also has a lot of movements. And I've been really surprised over time with, mind-body medicine, the shaking and dancing and movement, how it is a reset, just like music can be that reset.
I've been a dancer for many years, having been introduced to Gabrielle Roth's work, which is definitely a vehicle for grief work as well. And for getting back in touch with the sort of fundamental, her five rhythms, the fundamental rhythms of our bodies that that the strong emotions of grief bring up for us, that the anger, rage, defiance, the anguished wailing and thrashing about, the trembling of fear, or the freezing of fear, to actually enact all of the possible range of movement that our bodies are capable of, is also a way in.
You're giving me quite a lovely, I'm writing down reading lists that I'll have to put in the show notes. I'm really excited to dive into some of those. I usually on this show we do a we ask those we're interviewing if they could lead us in a mindfulness practice that people could either do with us if they're not driving or refer to later in practice. Is that something we could do?
I'd be happy to. Currently I'm bringing this reading list and all of what it's brought me to, carry as a certain body of literacy, perhaps, maybe even wisdom sometimes. We're meeting in a circle of care, where each of us takes a turn to speak to how grief is moving in our lives. And the rest of the circle is reverently listening and really holding up that mirror, perhaps, of, oh, it's like that for you. Registering our human compassion, empathy. And we meet monthly. We usually start with a just kind of let's all arrive and begin to create that field in which we're going to share that makes us feel, if not feel safe, then feel courageous. Worth a risk. Everybody's going to just listen to me. They're not going to, they're not going to interpret me. They're not going to correct me. They're not going to answer me unless I ask them to. Some basic principles of a listening circle. And I often will start in with just a few minutes of breathing together in the soft belly practice. Sometimes I'll encourage people to breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth and actually move it into a soft belly practice. Bring them into the body. And then we'll take it a little further. So I could model that now. And
that would be great.
Invite our listeners to... Yeah, find a position which is supported, which is grounded, maybe both feet on the floor, or if we're sitting in a chair, do they feel the weight being supported by the chair? And to simply allow the breath to flow softly, fully into the belly. Breathing in, the body softens. Breathing out, it lets go. Breathing in, I notice the weight. The weight of my body supported from below. Breathing out, I surrender to that support I receive. Just what's needed. I notice the fatigue that can settle. That can flow out with the out-breath. So that the next in-breath actually brings refreshment. And allowing my attention to follow the breath in through the nose, expanding the lungs, the chest, dropping into the belly, expanding the belly, softly settling into the bowl of my pelvis. And with the next breath, I let my attention flow with the breath, with that new energy being inhaled down through my legs, to my feet, and into the earth, reconnecting my body with the body of the earth. The physical reality. And I notice that with the out-breath, there's an urge to make a bit of a sound, as if some of that fatigue, some of that weightiness that I've been carrying, that I've been holding, can come out with the breath, can be expressed, literally. And just giving voice to it. Maybe we can recall the last time we were petting a cat. How freely they express the ease of just being present in the breath. And as we breathe, we can let our awareness expand beyond awareness just of our body sensations. Noticing any feeling, any emotion that is arising. That relief as fatigue flows away. Ah. We can extend our awareness to others with whom we're sharing the space. Maybe it's just the virtual space of sitting in this circle with me and with you, Sharon, being party to our conversation. And remembering that we came together today to be present to whatever is in our hearts, whatever we've been carrying, that might be grief. It might be a feeling of grieving, of loss, of confusion, of that don't know what's coming next, that fear of what's coming next. But what comes next is the next breath, bringing ourselves into the moment, allowing all of our awareness to be absorbed. And if at the possibility of being with grief, bring someone to mind, brings a cause or an event, brings a loss into our awareness in the moment. Perhaps we would like to share the name of the person we're missing. The loss that we're grieving. Perhaps we have an intention, something we'd like to bring to this circle, something we'd like to take from this circle when we leave. Perhaps we'd like to speak that into the space as well. For instance, I'd like to suggest that we all might receive permission to simply be in this moment. with the next breath or two, bring your awareness back to the belly, to the floor beneath your feet, to the chair beneath your seat. And when you're ready, allow yourself to be fully present here, now, among those we have called in, we have remembered. Thank you.
Thank you. That was really beautiful. As we begin to wrap up, if people listen to this and want to learn more about you and your offerings, how would they do that?
Couple of ways. The most direct way would be simply to get in touch with me. Email is best, unless it's a response is needed immediately, in which case text is good. Happy to hear from anyone. Currently, we're planning, with several wonderful collaborators, a song circle leader, an incredible musician, and art therapist, movement person. We're currently collaborating to present a solstice event on the 21st of December in Chico at the Chico Women's Club. It's by donation, so all are welcome. No one will be turned away for lack of funds. But if a person were interested in joining us for a spiral walk, the creation of a earth art mandala and some quiet grief work involving a period of rest in the darkest night or the longest dark night. We'll actually all just be together and we will rest. Because it's what I noticed everybody I know was saying, I just need to be less busy. I just need to, you know, not be overwhelmed. I just need a break.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fundamental kind of self-care. And it is finding a point of rest in the midst of things.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much that is grief-worthy, you know, at this time in this world, and we can't possibly hold it all in a ritual, but we can just set it down for a little while and know that we're not alone. And then monthly, we meet at Chico Body Wise, which is a collective of mostly somatic artists, but there's counselors and a variety of us. That's where the song circles happen monthly as well. It's a community hub for healing and growing work. And that's, you can find it on online. They have a website. Chico Body Wise Collective. BODY-WISE.
Perfect. I
And
will.
what I'm offering is, you know, through them is always listed in their on their website. Rather artfully done by Emma Schutz Forty, one of the curators of the space.
Perfect. Well, I'll share that with the larger listener for Mind Body Medicine as well.
Yeah.
Is there a song that you would recommend that we go out on? I'm sure there's so many.
Well, I mentioned the song circle leader, the songwriter and grief tender, Alexandra Ali Blakely. She goes by A-H-L-A-Y, Ali Blakely. She has music on, I think it's SoundCloud. Oh, I should have checked that out. She certainly has songs on YouTube.
Mm.
And there are a couple on YouTube that are that grow out of her grief work, her grief ritual work as well. Songs that she wrote recently in this past year. One of them is We Are Not Alone. And the words of that song, I don't know if we are meant to carry so much grief in one body. And the other line that is weaving through as we sing, I don't know if we're meant to carry so much grief in one body. We are not alone.
Mm.
We are not alone. And, you know, 200 people sing, we are not alone together.
Wow.
And you sing it and let the song fill all the little spaces that we're feeling all alone. Pretty powerful. Mm. You can get a taste of Ali leading that song on YouTube. And the other song is called The Shame Song, but it's I guess it's about shame. Really, really caught my attention because it affirms our right to be here however we are. So much of our grief is about, well, as Francis Weller speaks it, he says, you know, there's the places in us, the parts of us that have not yet known love. But have been, you know, shoved into the shadows or shamed out of existence. Recently been introduced to the concept of masking, which people with autism in particular, I mean, it's in that context that I was introduced to this concept of masking. It's where we act like we are the people that we think people want us to be. Or that we act like they seem to act because we don't feel like we belong. You know, somehow we're so different. Turns out we are. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, our final question is always, is there anything I haven't asked you that you feel is important to share or say?
I don't think so. I mean, I really appreciate the invitation to engage in conversation with you today, and I hope this is of value to your listeners. It was certainly of value to me to sort of review what have I got to say and what do I think is important to share. And well, I could just, you know, keep on talking, but this is probably enough for now. Thank you so much, Sharon.
Thank you. It was definitely of value to me.
You do not carry this all alone. No, you do not carry this all alone. This is way too big for you to carry this on your own. So you do not carry this all alone. You do not carry this all alone. No, you do not carry this all alone. This is way too big for you to carry this on your own. So you do not carry this all alone. You do not carry this all alone. No, you do not carry this all alone. This is where